that was my moment. That was when I realized this is what I want to do. Then they took it away and the bottom dropped out.
I'm Scott McGrew. Welcome to Sand Hill Road.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This week, Hooman Radfer, co-founder and CEO of Collective, as well as venture partner at Expa and early investor in what were at the time brand new startups Uber and SpaceX.
And I looked this up. Your name in Persian means benevolent and good-natured.
I try. Well, you'll let me know. At the end, you can ask. You can tell me if that's the truth.
Now, tell me about your first name. It's very close to human and benevolent and good-natured. I wish all humans were.
So it is very close to human. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. I was actually born in London. You can probably tell from my awesome accent. On my birth certificate, I believe my name was spelled pretty much human, you know, British people, right? 1980.
Sure.
My parents being Persian immigrants say my name. That's how they spelled it. And so there you go. So when I moved to the States, I think they issued me a new birth certificate and my parents changed the spelling to H-O-O from H-U-M-A-N because they thought, well, we don't want kids to pick on him.
did it help?
I'm not going to lie to you. I love my parents, but I think you know, they missed a cultural beat or two in that assessment.
It could have been Steve or something.
Yeah. I think they missed the mark. Like you know, but they're great, and they did their best. But you know, it builds character to have a name like Hooman in Pittsburgh.
I think you're too young to remember Mr. Magoo, who was this cartoon character. He had terrible eyesight, and so he would get into all kinds of scrapes.
But. Oh, I remember Mr. Magoo. I'm a big cartoon guy.
Oh, listen to them. They're yelling Magoo! Ah! Oh, they love me.
Excellent. And so, you know, that's exactly what people would call me because it's McGrew, but they would call me Mr. Magoo, and not in a nice way either, right? And the defense I came up with was, you know, as I recalled, he had a dog. And could anybody remember the name of his dog? Of course, this is before Google. You know, hey, yeah, no, Mr. Magoo, I love that guy. Do you remember the name of his dog? Because when I get a dog, I'm totally naming it that. And it usually kind of disarmed them. You know, it made the joke, you know, hurt a little less because I was turning it around on them.
Well, anytime you feel bad or you have some sort of trauma that surfaces, just remember your parents gave you Scott, you know, so you could have had Hooman.
You could have had Hooman. Now your family did flee the Iranian Revolution. As you mentioned, you were born in London. So your mom was pregnant at the time, right?
That's right. Yeah. My father and mother left. I think it was within like a week or two of that famous incident where they raided the embassy. If you've seen Argo, the movie with Ben Affleck.
I was probably 13 at the time. Yeah.
That's the moment.
Now, anyone who knows Hooman knows why he referenced a movie, Argo, when talking about the seizure of the American embassy in Tehran.
Actions of Iran have shocked the civilized world.
First of all, for him, it's history. He didn't watch it unfold live on television like I did. It's before his time.
Need to be held as hostages.
Secondly, Hooman loves movies.
When I mentioned the Iranian Revolution, you immediately mentioned the movie Argo. Now, I'm older than you are, so I would have been in junior high during the hostage situation, et cetera. So I remember it well, but people who know you well wouldn't be surprised that you used the movie as the way of illustrating the point. You are way into movies.
That's right. I'm actually obsessed with movies to a point.
Give me an example
mania.
Of what somebody who's obsessed with movies, you know, some sort of obscure fact or you know, tell me without telling me you're obsessed with movies that you're obsessed with movies.
I'll give you a game that my fiance and I play. So every time there's a movie, we'll go through as the cast is kind of getting introduced, you know what I mean? Throughout sure. the setup of the plot. And I can tell you I'll say, okay, what movie was this person in? And we can go through everything. Like I can do the whole network of what they've been in. And my current superpower, which I've developed over many years, is I could probably place someone from, like, say they were a kid in a movie. I can, you know, when they're an older person, I can be like, oh, that person was a kid in this movie, and go all the way back. So I'm a pretty visual person. I drew since I was a little kid, big comic geek. And so I guess that kind of tuned me there. But in another life, you know, I'm a movie producer versus, you know, building companies. Because I think it's, you know, building a company is a creative endeavor. It's just a different medium at the end of the day. And so I look at it like you have a pencil, you have a guitar, or you have, you know, you have Excel and code. And they're taking things from here.
You could produce movies. I mean, there are plenty of people in tech, Elon Musk included, who have been at some point a movie producer.
Yeah, I'm starting to invest a bit in projects to learn, much like I did early in investing. You know, I took some of the money I'd made in my first company and I just started doing Angel, which now has become a much more prominent part of my life. But the best way to learn is to dive in, right? Put skin in the game and get burned. So it's a tough industry though. And I don't think people appreciate how much goes into it. I mean, just imagine one of these Marvel movies. I mean, there are thousands of people that have to work to make like some of these moments, like I am Iron Man.
Truth is, I am Iron Man.
You know, it looks simple. Oh, what a line. But to manifest that, you're talking about thousands of people over 10 years to manifest that one moment of catharsis. It's unbelievable. Like the art is, I think, you know, Scorsese dings the Marvel movies. I think it's unfair. It's a symphony.
You did get into the movie business a little bit many, many years ago with the classic story of you owed the video store $80.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes. I tried, I should say. My first non-company, I should say, because it never got off the ground. So when I was in undergrad, I went to Penn, and it was during the .com. And, you know, I'm into movies. I love them, but I hated Blockbuster, right? And so you and me both know Blockbuster. Some kids who listen to this will be like, what the hell is that?
That's true.
This is where we went, kids, and we got tapes, and then we put them in VCRs, and we listened to watch movies. And so you had to drive them back, and it turns out I'm very poor at that. So I accumulated a lot of fees. But I was a good programmer. I had some foresight, and I picked up this paper, and it was like 99. So there's a paper written in 1993 by some Verizon scientists about using ADSL, asynchronous DSL, to deliver high-speed video. And they called the system Video On Demand. And I thought, how great is that? I don't have to do pay-per-view, which means you have to wait until the exact time to go watch a movie, right? Or you miss it. Or I don't have to go to Blockbuster and turn videos, because, you know, campus networks were incredibly fast at the time for the time, right?
Fastest you could find, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, going from that dial-up AOL world, which, you know, I used to pick on Steve Case and Ted Leonsis about that ringing noise or whatever.
Yes.
You know, going from that inspired me. I'm like, wait, we're watching movies. We were using Napster, all these other things. What if you could stream it? So I built a system with my friend Matt Keeson, and we were going to start a company. But then the bottom fell out.
You basically created Netflix. I mean,
Netflix as it is today.
About being angry about the, you know, the late fee, and I'm going to, you know, send movies over. You kind of created Netflix.
I'll tell you something even crazier, and this is about how important timing is. It's my earlier point. I and Matt, you know, we built this. We started, you know, building from the ground up, and we're looking at this, you know, system. And I looked at Netflix as, and I didn't even look at them as a comp. I was like, these guys are jokers. They're sending DVDs. They're in the past.
They're still
Get it. Yeah. They don't even get it. Right. And that is to me one of the, I remember that lesson and I'll never forget it. The timing was right. So they raised money for a business model that could work and be funded at that time, which got them to the point where they were when streaming became cost efficient, such that they were in a position that they could be there they are now. And that is why Netflix is successful. It's not, you know, they were at the right place at the right time, then they leveraged it to get the right place later and they kept moving. Much like Amazon, remember?
Yes. There's
just books. And now they're like one of the largest cloud computing companies on earth. Who would have called that?
Yes, you almost don't think of Amazon as buying a place to buy books anymore. That's where they
It's like Google. It's Google. Yeah, they do everything.
It is totally Google.
It's Google and it's a cloud company. And you know, I think the timing and having like a long view is something that taught me. So bottom dropped out. And then my professor who was sponsoring that said, well, we're not going to do a company. No one's going to fund you. You probably won't even get a job. So, but you have a good senior project.
So it is hard to describe to people who didn't live through it. The dot-com bust, people outside of perhaps Silicon Valley or outside of tech, because you were in Pittsburgh, just abandoned technology altogether. You could have had the next Google, the next Uber, the next Facebook, the next whatever. But if you tried to do it during the dot-com bust, nobody was interested.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, for me. Now, everyone had an experience. I don't think my experience was, you know, dissimilar from people my age, but, you know, from my vantage point, it was like the biggest tease of all time. So here I am, I'm a kid from Pittsburgh. My parents are immigrants. I thought there's like four jobs you get after school. Cause I didn't know anything. My parents just, they didn't know. They're like, you should be a doctor or something highly accredited.
Right.
When I switched into computer science, my mom like cried, you know, she literally was like, oh, if you want to go build bridges and, you know, make $30,000 a year, then go do that. But it's, you know, you're not going to make any money. And it was really traumatic for her, I think. And she was, you know, she's supportive. And she's amazing, but it was hard for her. She didn't see it. I go to Penn and I know, I don't know if you know Josh Koppelman, who was the founder of First Round. Josh Koppelman came in, did a lecture with a guy named Andy Ratcliffe. Andy Ratcliffe founded Benchmark. Okay. I'm sitting in there, 19 years old. I think a banker is a bank teller. That's where I'm at intellectually and from an experience perspective. And I go see these two guys. Josh looks like a kid. You know, he's got a cherubic kind of young face anyway. And at the time he'd sold half.com to eBay. And Andy was the venture capitalist that funded eBay.
Well, first of all, I didn't invest in eBay. My firm did. My name is Andy Ratcliffe. I'm a retired venture capitalist. I am very involved at my undergrad alma mater, Penn, as a trustee and as a chair of a number of different committees there, but I also come in and guest lecture. So I do it because I want to give back. I have a life well beyond anything I could ever imagine because of those two institutions, and I love to help those students achieve their goals.
It literally changed his life and changed the direction of his life.
You have to hear the stories of success in order for you to gain confidence that you might be able to do it yourself.
And I see these two guys, young, fresh, like, and I'm like, you're allowed to do this? You're allowed to make stuff? These guys are young. People are spending millions of dollars. They're allowed to, and technologists were in the forefront. I always, you know, thought, I didn't know what we were, you know, because I programmed since I was 12. But, you know, I remember I learned the internet and browser stuff from Mosaic. I remember I met Mark Andreessen. I'm like, dude, thank you. Because if you wouldn't have built Mosaic, I wouldn't have learned about the internet and I wouldn't have got hooked on this stuff. But that was my moment. That was when I realized this is what I want to do. Then they took it away and the bottom dropped out.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Your first big successful company was AdThis, which you sold to Oracle. When I'm sure your mother at this point understands that you and computer science are going to work out, that things are going to be okay. But do you recall the phone call to your mother when you sold your company for, I was what, a couple hundred million, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was up there. you know, our culture is you have to be very humble, you know, with your parents. So I couldn't call her, be like, hey mom, guess what? I sold it for X. And, she, you know, I let her know. Actually, you know, it's interesting. My mom really believes in us in a, you know, like any mother does, but in a very deep way. And she at the time was almost a little bit like, hey, you know, like you can keep going, like keep pushing, you know. She actually, I almost, you know, shut down the company many times, very early in the history. And my mom would be like, no, you can't do it. Can't quit. We're not quitting. So as much as she was afraid, she had a deep underlying conviction, both in my potential, but in the power of will and just keeping going. So I think for her, actually, she was kind of hoping I wouldn't do it. And then when I sold, I mean, she said, you know, if it was better for me, ultimately she supported me, but it was a mixed bag actually when I called her. And then it was funny. She said, okay, well, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Are you going to go back and get your PhD? You know, I think we even talked about Google at some point. Because she just didn't have a sense, like, what does one do after that? And I was like, yeah, no, I don't think I need to do that. I would go back for my PhD. It's interesting to me academically, I even as an adult, but she was thinking, oh my gosh, you don't have a job. What are you going to do?
That's right, you just sold your company for a couple hundred million, but you don't have a job. Yes.
No, literally that's what she thought. And she didn't want me to start burning my money. Cause I took some time off.
I would worry, as the parent of two very young adults, if they came into that kind of money, I think I would be pleased for them. But I think I would worry about them too.
Yeah. I think she had the appropriate amount of concern, a little bit colored by an immigrant experience, right? The sure. defense that most immigrants will play, in particular professionals, you go to school, you go to a marquee. And if they don't know, what the professions are, okay, go work at Google. That's a brand I understand. It used to be Microsoft when I was younger, right? Everyone wanted to work at Microsoft. Although Microsoft's back again. So
yes, it is cool very much so.
So who would have called that?
You take the money and you begin to invest. You're a very early investor in Convoy. And two of your fellow investors are Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, Convoy was an interesting experience, has been. And, I'm unbelievably impressed with what they've built. I remember we got the domain name for them. They were originally called Graypoint. And Dan and Grant came and spoke with us because at Expo, you know, the firm where I'd, you know, been a founding partner with Garrett Camp, who founded Uber, mm-hmm. you know, Uber. Okay, well, this is the new version of logistics, right? So who better to work with than the person that built the model, which inspired so many other models? I learned so much, but, you know, as a as an investor, the beauty is you see these entrepreneurs. I mean, thousands of people work at Convoy. Billions of dollars are moving around as a result. And, you know, started with two guys with a slide deck. So it's pretty, you know, people like that. The Sweetgreen team was another one that I was very impressed with from early on. They're going public this year.
Explain Sweetgreen. First of all, what is Sweetgreen?
So Sweetgreen is, I would say, a lifestyle, healthy lifestyle brand where, you know, they sell healthy food at accessible prices.
It's a restaurant.
Yeah. And their starting point is they have a retail chain, which is rapidly expanding around the country. But if you talk to the founders, I think, you know, they're much more than that. I mean, it's a brand that people affiliate with on their lifestyle. They're going to have products that they can sell. Eventually you could, just like Starbucks has products that you might see outside of Starbucks in stores, you know, those little espresso cans and whatnot. I think you could see Sweetgreen getting into that. I would say they're probably some of the best brand marketers on planet Earth I've ever seen.
The hesitation I have is, you know, I would love to have been an early investor in Starbucks. Don't get me wrong. But that, you know, oftentimes the investments go into things that can easily scale very, very quickly. Uber being an example of that. Retail and restaurants, those are harder to scale.
I agree. It was a longer road. I mean, you know, it's been years to the IPO. I mean, from a returns perspective, it worked out because I was, you know, early enough. Luckily, the team included me on the journey, right? Because it'll go out at multiple billion dollars if it goes public. And I got in at, you know, very little. So that for me, from an economics perspective, it worked out. But to your point, it took twice as long. Now, here's what's interesting about Sweetgreen. For me, I invested in another company called Spice. And Spice was based out of Boston, a bunch of MIT grads. Now, Spice had a similar vision to Sweetgreen with respect to, hey, how do we make healthy eating accessible at a low price point, but a different execution path? They built a robot, because they're out of MIT, of course.
Of course.
That would actually make bowls, and they could do cold bowls and warm bowls. Now, took them years. Like, they took the technology out of MIT. They built this thing out. They ended up deploying it in one or two of their own restaurants. Why does that matter? Well, they can fundamentally change the cost structure. Because as you know, the gross margin structure in restaurants, I think the biggest revolution in gross margin in restaurants was McDonald's. You went from, you know, fine dining, and it was like, you know, 3 to 5% and very, very bespoke. But the McDonald's folks, the innovation was, we're going to run this like a lean manufacturing plant. Mm-hmm. And do some, and it's, I mean, McDonald's to me is unbelievable as a company. You can have a burger in Tokyo at 3 a.m. or one in San Francisco at 2 p.m, tastes the same. That is magical that they can pull that off at the scale that they do. But Sweetgreen now has bought Spice, and they're going to now start rolling this out. So I would watch, and I challenge you to look at this in 5 years, if they're successful, this is going to, you'll see a step function. Like when McDonald's kind of innovated in fine dining, Sweetgreen is going to have something similar, and it's going to be a technology driven company. And I don't know how people are going to catch up with them after that.
I will refer back to this in 5 years.
Yeah, check it out.
One of the things you're working on now is Collective, which helps, you know, very small companies or companies of one person, contractors, that kind of thing, deal with these sorts of issues, getting, I would assume, accountants and other help all through the computer, right?
That's right. That's right. So, you know, I had been a founder before, obviously, with AdThis, and it served small businesses, large businesses. You know, we have 15 million customers at scale. And at Expa, you know, with Garrett and team, I had a great opportunity because I could be a founder supporting founders. But it was a lot more bespoke, personalized. You know, we brought capital, but we also helped launch and build a number of different companies. And I, as much as I enjoyed that, and it is a privilege, honestly, to work with the founders, you learn so much, and to be part of their journey, it's humbling. I miss that operational building, you know, being there hand to hand with customers, and I miss the scale of it. You know, I was dealing with millions of customers. Now I'm, you know, over 10 years, maybe I have 20, 30. And again, I love it, but I miss that piece. Collective was kind of is the perfect intersection of my past lives, because what's happening in the world, and I'm sure you're aware of this and have friends that are doing this, 36% of the United States has freelanced or run their own business. That is shifting to 50%. And obviously with COVID and whatnot, there's an accelerant towards that shift. Our vision is pretty simple at Collective. we want to make what we call these businesses of one, whether they're freelancers, consultants, but parents, like my doctors, like my parents. My parents were both solopreneurs. I never thought of them that way.
They had their own office. They're business people, even though they're physicians. Yes.
They run their own, and they would be my customer. And how can we make them more financially successful? Simple. Let them focus on their passion, not their paperwork. My mom, next version of her comes over, doesn't speak English. The United States is not easy to run a business. You have to incorporate, you have to do taxes, you have accounting, bookkeeping, a lot you have to do. You have to do it right. Bad news. If you don't do it right, you can lose money and you can shut down your business. Worse news. If you get it right, you don't get points on the board. You still have to run your business.
Right.
And so for us, you know, we look at the entrepreneurs as Batman and we're Robin. We're in the background. We're trying to help them out. And I hope we can leverage it to benefit all these founders, because I'm telling you, when we get on the phone with them, when we do a great job, we're really making a difference in people's lives. Like during COVID, you know, there are people that were crying. Their businesses were shutting down. So we didn't charge them for months. They applied to us. We gave them credit for 3 months. We'll do your taxes. Don't worry about it. We did it. And it came out of our pocket. I'm proud of that. But you know, when we mess up, like last tax season, we grew really quickly. I mean, the demand's unbelievable. We have, you know, almost 30,000 people that are waiting. They want to sign up for the service. And so, but we tried to grow as fast as we could, and we went over our skis a bit. And a few people, you know, things were delayed. Didn't have the great experience. It hurts. It hurts us because, you know how it is, I'm sure. It's your money. And if someone, the person who's handling your taxes doesn't get back to you as fast as possible, you know, you're upset. So it's like Spider-Man. With great power comes great responsibility. We got to keep leveling up.
I suppose I should end by asking you, which Spider-Man of all the many, many, many Spider-Mans is the best Spider-Man movie?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. What's the best Spider-Man movie? I will say, I don't know. So the thing is, like, for me, I mean, I don't know if you remember this because I'm a comic geek, but do you remember what, like, the old 80s movies when Marvel tried to initially start off with these like Spider-Man shows and they were like pretty grungy?
Pretty cheesy. Yeah.
So as soon as Tobey Maguire came in, I was just blown away because for the first time, my imagination was painted on the screen, right? I had been in comics. I had loved them and I could see it. I just, people didn't dream the way I was dreaming about it, which I understand. And then for the first time, they put great actors, big budget, CGI. So Tobey Maguire and his has a place in my heart because it opened up the world to the world that I lived in. I felt like I could be a community with him. My fiance and I watch all the Marvel movies and we love them. So I do love that. But the new Spider-Man, I got to say, he's pretty good. He's pretty good. I actually own Amazing Fantasy, the 15. I bought it. I love, I'm a huge comic geek. So it's one of my most treasured possessions, guarded with my life.
So when your mother was worried about, you know, you coming into sudden wealth that you bought a comic book.
I'm not going to lie to you. I have more than one. Yeah. I'm not going to lie to you. I have more than one.
I'm sure you do. And does your mother, with the success of Collective, does your mother still wish you worked at Google?
You know, I haven't asked her. I'm actually going to see her this week and I'll ask her. But I think my mom and my dad at this point want us to be happy, want us to have families, want us to be well-adjusted. And they've shifted away from the basic needs part of parents. I'm not a parent yet. I hope to be soon. I think they've shifted to that and they just want us to make sure we're, you know, when kids are younger, at least the treatment we got was, they wanted to make sure we were on our own. We're okay. You know, you're on your, mm-hmm. your own 2 feet. Once they kind of get past that, okay, it's, do you have some sort of lifestyle that's sustainable? And I think, look, candidly, the feedback I get is you work too hard, right? Cause I work 80 hours a week sometimes. And, you know, it was one thing when I was 25, but you know, I'm not 25 anymore. So it's a little bit harder, you know, I'm a little more road worn.
But they sound like good parents.
No, they're great. They're great. And, but very classically immigrant parents, like a lot of, you know, my friends who come from India or, you know, other countries, we often swap stories and there truly is a pattern amongst them. And I think there's a, you know, I'm a huge proponent of immigration in the United States, in particular around STEM. And, I think some of the things that, these parents are doing to push those kids and create, you know, that desire to succeed, that desire to build, the desire to prove themselves in this country is helping the country. And I hope that we continue to do it. I mean, if I had my druthers, every single top STEM school, I'd stamp a visa. I'd just give it to them. And we should do that because I'm telling you, when I was in grad school, kids were begging for visas. I went to speak at, I spoke at Carnegie Mellon, I've lectured at Stanford, Berkeley. They're going home now because they can go to India and start a company now.
Right. The genius of America is it's like picking, you know, a soccer team on the playground, in which instead of, you know, I pick one, you pick one, I pick a kid, you pick a kid. I get to pick the first 15. And my soccer team is going to beat you every time.
You're right. You're right. And I think the edge that we have, and again, I think people need to objectively look at the United States. Yes. Is China a rising competitor? And we need to take it seriously. Yes. Is the world different? It's not going to be the United States only anymore. And that can be a good thing for us.
Sure.
But it's still the freest place. It's still the best place to do business. The values of this country are really, really deep. And if we can invest in what's just made us great, which is to your point, and I love that analogy, the best of the best will come through this place. Let's keep them. Let's keep them here. Let's make sure that they get to be citizens. Let's move forward and let's not confuse. I mean, we're a nation of immigrants. Nobody in this country has been here. I mean, I'm living in San Francisco. You know, the Asian American population there, which has recently experienced issues, they have some of the folks there. I talked to a woman, she's been there longer than most people. Her family's been there 3-4 generations since like after the railroad. They have houses all over the Bay Area. They're more American than me in that regard, right? And so I think it's a feature and we need to keep investing in it. It's tough. I know we have some things to do in the country, but again, I'm very long in America. I know we started with this. I'm going to end with it. Best place in the world to work and build. I'm also a contrarian believer in the Valley still, I guess. I used to be not. It's everyone thought the Valley. I'm all about remote work, but I think Silicon Valley is, you're going to continue to see amazing things coming out of Silicon Valley. And the rest of the world gets to do it too. So that's great. Let's do it.
Hooman Radfer, venture partner, investor at Expa, and co-founder and CEO of Collective, which recently closed a $20 million Series A. Sandhill Road is produced by Sean Myers under the leadership of Sarah Bueno and Stephanie Adruni. For more interviews with Silicon Valley's most influential entrepreneurs, check me out on TV at Press Here. That's Sunday mornings on NBC Bay Area and everywhere in the world on iTunes and at PressHereTV.com.